It's on now.
Okay.
It's on. That was me. Now we can hear me. I can hear me too. Again, good evening. And now that you can hear me and see my sermon title is Who Needs a Pep Talk? Oh, was it not up there?
That's not audio, though, so that doesn't count.
All right, that isn't audio. There we go. All right. So now you can see it. All right. Now, hopefully that's all the troubles we have this evening. It is all me. You know, every time I've ever done that, I plugged it in. It worked right there just the same way. What is a pep talk? So it's usually a brief, intense, emotional talk designed to influence or encourage an audience. We kind of think of pep talks in the sports world. And you can see my photo up there is a boxer. And his coach is in front of him. He's got a pretty intense look on his face, and he's trying to, I don't know what he's saying to that boxer, but you can kind of get the fact, you know, he's trying to inspire him. And I don't know if you can see on there, but he's got an ice pack on his back, so he's probably not feeling the greatest. And that's usually when we need a pep talk, is when we're not feeling great, but we still have some challenge that's in front of us, you know. And, you know, the giver of the pep talks, it's usually someone in authority or someone that has some knowledge or has had some experience, you know, like this coach here, you know, or a father figure or a mother or someone like that who's, you know, trying to encourage and lift up, you know, the people that are struggling. And, you know, everyone, I think, needs a pep talk. So that answers the question, right? So there's my little photo up there. I was trying to find a photo of me in high school, but I couldn't find one. But I wrestled in high school, so that's as close as I get. But when I was wrestling in high school, I wrestled all through my high school years. And I got to my senior year, and I started doing pretty well. And I had won several matches. And I went to a tournament, and I was doing well in the tournament. And then I broke my finger, my little finger. And it was in Las Vegas when I broke it, and so I had to come back home with a broken finger. They didn't take me to a doctor or anything. They just took me home. So I had to drive home on the van, and I got home and, you know, had to show my parents my finger, which was kind of laying across the middle of my hand. And so I went to the doctor, and of course they had to reset it. And then, you know, bones take about 6 weeks, 8 weeks to heal, you know, and that was essentially the entire wrestling season. And so I kept going into practice, but you can't really wrestle. So, you know, I was riding a bike in the corner and doing what I could, but it wasn't, you know, actively engaging in the sport. So when it came time, my hand finally healed. Of course, you know, when your hand heals, you know, it you know, all these muscles have atrophied and they're not as strong as they used to be. And, you know, having grip strength in wrestling is kind of an important thing. And I didn't have it. It was gone. And I couldn't rehab that quickly. And so as a result, you know, I wasn't able to win. And I went to my coach, you know, and it was getting to be the end of the season, and they had just, you know, there was the regional finals. And I went to my coach and I was like, you know, I don't really see the point in doing this. I'm hurt, and I was hurt, I'm recovering, but you know, I can't get back to where I was. You know, I don't see the point of going on. You know, I kind of want to just, you know, not take me out. There's no point in me doing this. And I just want to step away, and you know, because I'm frustrated and I'm, you know, sad, and I was doing well, and now I'm not doing well. And my coach listened to me, and he said, "Yeah, I know it's been rough for you." He goes, "But there's something more that's going on. You know, you got a decision to make, and you know, and you could quit if you wanted to." He goes, "But if you quit now, you know, that door will be open to you for the rest of your life." And it was one of those moments in time when, you know, it just rang in my head. I could say, I was sitting there in the mat room and remember the smells. And I remember, you know, him sitting there. And it just, you know, it dawned on me. He's like, "I don't really want to open that door, I don't think." And so I went and I finished up the season and I didn't win anything. I lost, you know. But I didn't quit. And, you know, that bit of advice, it went a long, long way. And when things got hard, you know, and they always do, you know, I remembered, you know, if you quit now, that door is going to be open to you. It'll always be open. And so, you know, I've tried not to, to quit on anything ever, and I think that has carried me through a lot of hard times. You know, and just that little pep talk, a little bit of emotional, you know, spurring, you know, from someone who had a little bit more life experience than I did. And so it helped me, and I remember that. I remember that day like it was yesterday. It's one of those few things in my life. It's like, you know, that moment in time was just branded into my brain. And I recall it often. And I was thankful for that. You know, we have a lot of different pep talks in our scriptures. And I'm going to talk about this one. This is an interesting one. This is Nephi. He's giving a pep talk. And if you look in 1 Nephi in the first chapter, verse 135. And now I, Nephi, being a large man in stature, and also having received much strength, Lord, therefore I did seize upon the servant of Laban and held him that he should not flee. And so they went back to Jerusalem to get the plates, and they have this Zoram is there. He's helping him. Nephi puts on the armor of Laban after he slays him, and he goes in, gets the plates, and they come out, and they realize, and Zoram realizes this is not Laban. And so he tries to flee, and so Nephi grabs him and pins him down. In verse 136, and it came to pass that I spake to him that if he would hearken unto my words, as the Lord liveth and as I live, even so, that if he would hearken unto our words, we would spare his life. That's kind of an interesting pep talk. So you have a very large man holding you down and telling you, you better listen to me or I'm going to kill you. He's like, all right, you have my attention. And so Zoram gets this pep talk. Verse 137, I spake unto him, even with an oath, that he need not fear, that he should be a free man like unto us, if he would go down in the wilderness with us. And I also spake unto him, saying, surely the Lord hath commanded us to do this thing. And shall we not be diligent in keeping the commandments of the Lord? Therefore, if thou wilt go down in the wilderness to my father, thou shalt have a place with us. And so he gives them this promise. I'm not going to hurt you, but we can't have you going back. You know, these things that I have here, they're precious. They're records. Now they're going to want them back, you know. But if you come with us, we'll give you a place. And so Zoram, you know, well, I either flee back and get killed or come with you. So that's kind of, again, kind of a forced pep talk. But Zoram takes him up on it, and they go. And they go back to the tent there, and they take the records with them. You know, and they have this forced sort of pep talk. And, you know, I've done that before, too. Got a picture of myself and my boys. And this is a trip we took into Mooney Falls down there in Havasupai, the trail down there in the Grand Canyon. And it must be on the way down because the boys are smiling. So on the way down, we got to where we're going, and it's a, you know, absolutely gorgeous place. We spent a few days down there. Well, then the time came that we had to leave. And to leave, you got to hike out. And the hike out is all uphill. And so, of course, they have a helicopter that comes in and out of there. And it ferries people down to the bottom, and it ferries people out. And you pay quite a bit of money, and they could give you a helicopter ride out. And so we start walking, and my boys were a little sad about that. They were whining, and they were crying, and they were complaining, and they wanted the helicopter ride. And they kept crying, and they said, and finally we had to stop on the trail. And I grabbed both of my boys and was like, look, I can't afford to fly you out of here. You got to walk. All right, you have to walk. There's no choice. There is no helicopter. I know you can see it going back and forth, but there is no helicopter here. You've got to walk out of here. And you can do it. I believe in you guys. You can walk. All right? You've been playing around for 4 days, acting like you got the strength. I know it's not easy, but you can do it. And, you know, they started whimpering a little bit, but they stopped crying so much. And then we hiked out. And we got out of there. You know, and had to give them that little stop on the way. I was like, we can do this. I'm here with you. Your grandmother's here with you. You got our friends that are here with you. You're not going to get left behind. We're going to take care of you. It's going to be hard. Can't take away the hardness of it, but I can guarantee you we're going to get through this. You know, this little forced pep talk. We got no choice. We got to do this. You got to come. You got to walk. You got to put one foot in front of the other. You have to. And so we got out of there. And we hiked out, and I was real proud that they were able to do that. It's kind of a proud father moment. They were able to hike out of there even though it was hard. Another pep talk. This is Alma. He's talking to his son, Corianton. And Corianton, if you read in that 19th chapter of Alma, he is, Corey Anton has messed up. He has not done well. And he has the two previous chapters, you know, Alma's speaking to his sons, and he's like, you know, saying, hey, you're doing a great job. It was that kind of a pep talk. You're doing awesome. Keep it up. Here's things to remember. And then he comes to Corey Anton, and Corey Anton is not doing so well. And so the whole chapter is really a big, you know, dissertation on to his son. He's trying to help save his soul. And he has to have an unpleasant conversation. And it's not nice. Not that he's being mean, but he's just, it's not a pleasant thing to do. There's things we have to do sometimes. There's words that we got to hear sometimes that don't bring us joy or happiness. But it's things that we need to hear. So Alma speaks to his son. In Alma 19, verse 5. This is not all, my son. Thou didst do that which was grievous unto me, for thou didst forsake the ministry and to go over into the land of Sihon, among the borders of Lamanites, after the harlot Isabel. And she did steal away the hearts of many. But this was no excuse for thee, my son. Skipping to verse 7. Know ye not, my son, that these things are an abomination in the sight of the Lord, yea, most abominable of all sins, save it be the shedding of innocent blood or the denying of the Holy Ghost. And he tells him, you know, I'm afraid that you've done this. He's having this hard conversation with his son. But it's for a purpose. Verse 11, I would not dwell upon your crimes to harrow up your soul if it were not for your good. You know, this was tough love. He just got done telling his other two boys, you're doing great, you're doing awesome, keep it up. And then he had to have this hard conversation with his third son. Because he could see where he was going, where he was going to end up. And the fear of that was greater than the feelings that his son was going to have in this hard, hard conversation that he had to have. I don't want to do this. I don't want to tear you down. I'm afraid if I don't, you know, you're going to end up lost for all eternity. And so we had to have this hard, hard conversation. Not easy. Joseph, earthly father of Christ, you know, he got to have a pep talk. Matthew in the first chapter, verse 18. Now the birth of Jesus was on this wise. When as his mother was espoused to Joseph, before they came together, she was found with child of the Holy Ghost. And so if you write there, in according to the Mosaic law, you know, if you were found with child prior to being married, you know, they could do a lot of things to you. One of the things, they could stone you, you know, they could remove you from the community there. Now that's weighed heavy on Joseph's mind. And I was like, is he going to say that he did it? Because then he would be also at fault. Is he going to say somebody else did it? Is he going to cast shame? So Joseph, in verse 19, then Joseph, her husband, being a just man and not willing to make a public example, was minded to put her away privily. He's like, well, I don't want to put her out. I don't want to shame her. We're just put her away so that no one, we're going to try and hide this so that no one knows about it. Verse 20, but while he thought on these things, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a dream, saying, Joseph, thou son of David, fear not to take unto thee Mary thy wife, for that which is conceived in her is of the Holy Ghost. And she shall bring forth a son, and thou shalt call his name Jesus, for he shall save his people from their sins. So he gets this heavenly messenger to come down and tell him, hey, it's going to be okay. Everything is in order. You know, it didn't make it easy. He had to flee the country. He had to go live in Egypt, and I'm sure that wasn't easy. To like uproot and go to another country. I don't know, probably didn't speak the language. I don't know what language they spoke, but there's different customs, there's different people. He's got no family. Not easy. But he told him, there's a point. There's a purpose. And what I'm asking you to do, you've got to go. You can take her. You need to protect her and this child. It's for a purpose. And so he did. He did just that. And then he was told once again, hey, Herod has passed away. You can come back. And he came back. And he raised his family there in Nazareth. Nephi, the son of Nephi, he gets a pep talk. If you go into 3 Nephi, again, this is kind of part of the Christmas story. 3 Nephi, verse 9. And prior to this, they were unbelievers. You know, Samuel Lamanite had come and he'd given these prophecies and he told everyone, hey, these are the signs you're going to see when Christ comes. These are the things that are going to happen. You're going to see these wonders in the sky. You're going to see a day and a night and a day, and it's going to be as if it's one whole day. And so he prophesies these things and people believe, and then it starts, time goes on, and as people do what people do, they start to disbelieve. He said, oh, well, the time's passed. It should have happened already. It's not coming. And evil people began to take place in the government. And they made a decree saying, everyone's going to die. Verse 9, we'll read that. Now it came to pass that there was a day set apart by the unbelievers that all those who believed in those traditions should be put to death, except the sign should come to pass, which had been given by Samuel the prophet. Now it came to pass that when Nephi, the son of Nephi, saw this wickedness of his people, his heart was exceedingly sorrowful. And it came to pass that he cried mightily unto the Lord all that day. And behold, the voice of the Lord came unto him, saying, lift up your head and be of good cheer. For behold, the time is at hand, and on this night shall the sign be given. And on the morrow I come into the world to show the world that I will fulfill all which I have caused to be spoken by the mouth of my holy prophets. So he prays, you know, this weight is bearing on him. We've believed. We've followed your word. We've done what you've asked. And now it's being used against us. We're going to die. Our lives are going to be taken from us. Is this what you want, Lord? He's sorrowful. I'm not in charge. I can't stop this. And God answers his prayer. Comes in, tells him, don't worry, I've got it. I'm going to take care of it. Everything's going to be all right. You know, in this instance, he didn't know it, but everything was going to be okay. Everything's going to be just fine. But you know, sometimes it really is bad and we don't even realize it. You know, this photo here, and this is a pretty common photo, common depiction of Christ on the cross. And we look at that and it's, you know, we can feel that. You can feel that he is, you know, hurting. You can see the nails in his hands and his feet. You can see the crown of thorns on his head. You can see he's got the wound in his side. All those things that he showed everyone when he returned, when he came to this land, when he came back among his disciples. Look at this. Here they are. But you know, I watched something the other day, and this commentator was talking. He's like, you know, there was a movie, it's 20 years ago now, I looked it up, now I'm starting to feel old. 20 years ago, there was a movie called Passion of the Christ, and some of you may have seen that. And this commentator said, you know, that's probably the closest depiction we've seen of an actual crucifixion. He goes, but it pales in comparison to what actually happened. That was a sanitized version of what took place. And we have these photos here, these pictures here. You know, we can see Jesus is intact. And he's a little scarred up, a little nicked up. He's on the cross. You know, but when they scourged him, they didn't give him the luxury of having anything on. They scourged his back until his bones were exposed. And then they turned him over and they scourged him on the front. And if you look in Isaiah in the 52nd chapter, there's a verse in there that says he was scarred beyond recognition. He was marked like no man was marked before. You couldn't recognize. You probably couldn't tell if he was a man or a woman. It's horrible. The depravity and the evil. You know, I went to a training a few years ago. And in this training, they were telling this story. And this was this apprehension unit. These group of officers, law enforcement officers from different agencies. And they go around, they look for the worst of the worst. They go on, they look at for murderers, you know, people that are committing armed robberies and aggravated assaults and rapes and murders. And these are the people that they chase. And you know, most of the time in law enforcement, you have victims, and they're not always your ideal victim. When you look at them, there are people that are like, two drug dealers that got into a fight and one killed the other. You know, we got these two people that got in an argument and were fighting each other, and one of them got hurt. And you know, they're robbing, you know, people that are selling drugs or ripping each other. And you have all these victims that are, you know, like, nah, you don't really feel all that bad for them because they're living this life. But in this one story, they were telling a story, and this was a truly evil man and a purely innocent victim. And I'm not going to tell you what he did, because I don't know that everyone can handle it. And he told us the same. He had a video of this murder that took place. And when he started doing this training, he was showing this video, and he was told, you have to stop. There are people coming back from your training, and they have to go to counseling now because they can't handle what this man did. The level of evil that he displayed. So you're going to have to bear that on all by yourself. You and your detectives, you can't show that anymore. You know, we do the same thing. We draw these photos, these pictures, and we cover him with a cloth. We show him intact. And when he came back, he did the same. His disciples recognized him, and the only thing different was, you know, feel the prints in my hand, feel the wound in my side. And they knew who he was. They recognized him. He didn't look as he truly looked, because they couldn't have handled the way he looked. The amount of evil that was done to him. And you know, there's even more. Now, that's just the physical side, because I don't know that we can even describe the spiritual side adequately. What he had to go through. And you think about it. You know, when I sin, I'm ashamed. And I'm angry. And I'm upset. And I want to withdraw. And I don't want to engage with people. When I hear about sin, it affects my heart. It bothers me. And that's just me. What would it feel like to take every sin of the world onto yourself? I don't know that we have words that describe it. Because we can't handle it. We can't go there. It can't be done by us. You know, it's bad. You know, Jesus, he faced the absolute worst, physically and spiritually. We go to Matthew in the 26th chapter. Then cometh Jesus with them unto a place called Gethsemane, and saith unto the disciples, sit ye here while I go pray yonder. He took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and began to be sorrowful and very heavy. You know, this weighed on his mind. And he said to them, my soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here and watch with me. I feel like I'm going to die. The prospect of what I've got to do tomorrow, the physical pain, spiritual pain. and I've got to do it by myself. And he went a little further and fell on his face and prayed, "Oh, my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt." He had to consider these things. This is what he had to think about. And it weighed heavy, knowing that he had to bear that alone. And so, Jesus had to get a pep talk. If you look in Luke in the 22nd chapter, and it came to pass when he was at the place, he said unto them, "Pray that ye enter not into temptation." And when he was withdrawn from them about, a stone's cast, and kneeled down and prayed, saying, "Father, if thou be willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done." He said, "God, is there another way? Can you give me another path? Can you help me?" And I don't know what was said, but the next line, verse 43, "And there appeared an angel unto him from heaven, strengthening him." What did he say? And we don't have the words, but he came down. When you look earlier in Matthew, look in the Christmas story, and the angel Gabriel comes, and he talks to Mary, and he talks to Zechariah. He tells Zechariah, "Hey, your wife is going to have a child." Tells him what he's going to do. And Zechariah tells him, "Oh, how? I'm old. My wife's old. How are you going to do this? It doesn't make sense." And Angel Gabriel's response was, "I come from the throne of God. I come from the God of the universe. He told me this message. He gave it to me to give to you." So this angel comes from the throne of God to strengthen Christ, to help hold him up. What does he say? How do you talk to someone who has to face this? You got to have a purpose. It's like, "Tell me, is there any other way? Is there anything I can do?" And the angel came down. I don't know what he said, but I can guess. He's like, "Look, I know this is hard. But you can't give up now. If you give up now, Aaron Moser can't handle it. He's unable to withstand the evil that's in this world. He's unable to take the sin. He can't do it. You got to think about what's on the line. And who's going to pay that price if you don't carry through? No one else can do it. But you have the strength. You have the capability. You alone. You can do it. You were prepared. You were made for this, to come in and conquer death, conquer sin, so that people might know you. They might know God. They may one day reside with you for all eternity. Will you do it so that those that are out there that are lost, they may know you, and they won't have to face this, because they will be crushed physically, they'll be crushed spiritually, but you can do it. You were made for this. And so Christ arose, and he goes back to his disciples. And they come to get him. Peter draws his sword. And the pep talk must have worked. It held root in his heart. He said, I could stop it all. I'm in charge of the finest legions of angels there are. And I can end it all. But I'm not going to. Because I have to go forward. No one else can do it. He receives strength. Because when you read through the crucifixion story, you know, you don't read about him crying out, succumbing to the torture that they give him. And in fact, he takes the time and all that to speak to a thief on the cross, to speak to make sure his mother is taken care of. And the only cry he makes out, it is done. And he gave up the ghost. And he won. And now he's made us a deal. In 3 Nephi, in the 4th chapter, he comes to this land. Verse 47, as many as have received me, to them have I given to become the sons of God. Even so will I, to as many as shall believe on my name. For behold, by me redemption cometh, and in me is the law of Moses fulfilled. I am the light and life of the world. I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. You shall offer up unto me no more the shedding of blood. Yea, your sacrifices and your burnt offerings shall be done away. For I will accept none of your sacrifices and your burnt offerings. You shall offer for a sacrifice unto me a broken heart and a contrite spirit. And that's the entry fee for us. We want to gain his protection and come under his strength. Because he's coming back. And he's not coming in as the lamb. He's coming back on a white horse. With a sword. He's coming back to set things right. He's coming back to end evil. And all we have to do to be under his protection is to give him our will. Give him our heart. Let go of what I want. Let go of what I think I need. Let go and turn it over to Christ. And give it to God. We will enter in one day into his glory. I thank you for your time.